This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Okay, so good evening, and we will start then on Daf Lamed Amud Aleph in Beitzo. And we are about two-thirds of the way down the page, just after those brackets. It's about half the page, sorry. Omalei Rova Barav Chanin La'abaya. About half the page at the beginning of the line is an Omalei Rova Barav Chanin La'abaya. Tzman, we learned in the Mishnah, Ein metatchin ve'ein mesatchin ve'ein meraktin. The subject of the Gemara is going to be to explore the conditions under which you intervene if somebody is doing something wrong. If somebody is doing an aver, is it your business? Do you have to intervene? And if so, under what circumstances and conditions do you intervene? So the Gemara says, we had in the Mishnah, Ein metapchin, ve'ein mesapkin, ve'ein meraktin. You don't clap hands on Shabbos, and you don't clap your hand against your thigh, and you're not allowed to dance on Shabbos. What is the reason? Why aren't you allowed to do those things? Explains Rashi. Mishum shir, or mishum evel. You don't do it because you're singing, or because of mourning, or whatever. Why not? The kulam nesru mishum shvus, they're all drabonans. So the rabbonim were gozer that you're not allowed to do it. It's not a doraisa. For what reason? Gezeiro shemo yitaken kli shir. We're afraid that the next thing is you'll use a drum, and then you'll use a cymbal, and then you'll all of a sudden you'll be running a little orchestra in your house there, and that's not what we want. And you'll fix when musicians are busy with their instruments, they're constantly fixing them, tuning them, and fine-tuning them, and that's an isidoraisa. So we don't want you doing anything that could bring you to the use of musical instruments. That's the reason. The Gemara goes on to say, V'ha'idna d'cho chazinan d'avdom hachi. But the fact is, we see around people do it. It's actually done. People dance and people clap hands on Shabbos. They even do it in shul. V'lo'y amirin lu, v'lo'y midin. You don't see the rabbonim getting upset. Nobody says anything. So what could the reason for that be? So clearly you don't have to intervene. Certainly under the Rabbanan, you don't have to intervene. Omar Leh, so he answers them and says all the time, I can bring you other cases. Hold the Omar Rove. Lo neisiv inish akuma de lechir. Dilma megander le chefetz. V'ati le yitu yidaradamas b'rishu sarabi. We have a din that you could have a courtyard which is separated from a Rishus HaRabim just with a beam across the top. So you have a very wide opening into a courtyard, and there's no gateway necessarily, you've just got a beam over the top. And if you sit, what the Chachamim were worried about, that if you sit near that entrance and you're playing ball or whatever, the ball might roll out of the entrance, and you'll go out to get it, because you won't think, there's not a fence, there's not a gate, you won't realize you're running into Rishus HaRabim. You're going, you pick up the ball, and you're over in Yisud Darais of carrying Rishus HaRabim. So they said, you're not allowed to sit near the Mabui, in case your objects will roll out into the Rishus HaRabim. Well, Hani Nashi, but if you look around, you see now that there are women, the Shaklon Chatzbayu, who take their pictures, and they sit at that very place. The Chachamim walk past, the Rabbanim walk past, and they don't say anything. So here's another case where we don't intervene. Ela, what is the reason? Hanach lehem li Yisrael, leave Yisrael alone. Don't badger them. Mutzav shi yishoygim lo yu mizidim. Let them rather do it by mistake than on purpose. In the yeshiva we used to, there was a friend of mine who refused to learn Hilchos Lashon Hara. He said, I would rather do it for Shogeg. I don't want to know the laws. I'm going to be doing it in any case. I might as well do it for Shogeg. Well, we'll see if that really works. You're allowed to withhold your own knowledge. But the question is to what? To go and intervene, you're actually doing somebody a disservice. particularly if you know they won't stop. So then we've got to look at that. Does this mean only if you know they won't stop? But certainly if you know they won't stop. What service are you doing by telling them? You go to somebody and say, not allowed to do this on Shabbos. So now what have you done? You've made him amazed. Before he was a shogeg, now you've made him amazed. A big service you've done. Thank you very much. What have you achieved?
Isn't it dependent on who tells them? If the wolf walks past and tells them, don't do it, they might stop. If the ordinary youth from the street walks past, they don't always listen.
Yeah, they're not talking about, you're thinking about Mizrahi shul, the Rav will go past and say something, people will stop there. No, shuls aren't like that. But okay, we've got to look and see if the person, what the situation is when you know that they will listen to you, do you have to do it? So we'll see. It would seem yes, because we're saying, what is the reason not to do it? Is mitzvah you shogeg lo yum mezin, let them rather be shogeg and not be mezin. But if you know they'll stop altogether, then you do have a responsibility to do it. So it seems to be talking about a situation where you believe they will not stop. So by intervening, all you're doing is you're not saving the avera, you're just converting a shogeg into a mezin. What's the big deal? So we'll come back to that in a moment. I want to take a slight aside and learn an interesting tosfos. Ein metapchin ve'ein meraktin perush Rashi. Rashi said, Shema Yisakin Klishi, in case you'll come to be Misakin to fix tune, musical instrument. Umiu ledidan shari, but for us it's okay, we're allowed to clap. Nowadays we're allowed to clap and we're allowed to dance. The dafke be a main show you bekeen lasus klishir sharechim mitza. Because in those days when they used to know how to make the musical instruments themselves, that we were afraid that that's what they would do. They knew how to take a piece of wood and a string and put them together and make a little guitar. But we don't know. We don't do that kind of thing. If you want a cliche, you go to a music shop and you buy one. So today, only their time shayach l'migza avala didan. But for us, ein anu bekiyin lasos kleshir v'loy shayach l'migza. We are not bekiyin in making a kleshir, and therefore the gezera doesn't apply. Which is an interesting situation. Why is that interesting? And as Yosef says, then we learned on Daf Hei, those of you who remember what we learned on Daf Hei? Gzeiros days, very good. Dovah Shibaminyan, Surah Minyan Achel Atira. You can't just change Gzeiros when the reason goes away. When the Chacham Institute the Gzeiros days, even if the reason goes away. How can Tosfos say, asks the Beis Yosef, that the reason's gone away, so the Gzeiros gone away? Where does that come from? So answers the Beis Yosef, that Tosfos compares it to, and we have another case where the riba does go away, which is the din of mayim megulim. That is, if you leave liquid in a container uncovered overnight, you're not allowed to drink it the next morning. And the halacha is that was in their days, but not in our days. In our days, you are allowed to drink it. What is the reason? Because little insects can get into the glass, and they can be poisonous, and it's dangerous. So you don't leave things around for that reason, and drink them the next day. But today, where we live in more insulated living conditions, and there are not snakes and scorpions wandering around the house, and poisonous spiders and things like that, it's very unusual that an insect might fall in, but you feel that something would poison the water, and you wouldn't be able to see it the next day. That's very unusual, so we don't have big gezeira today. So the Tosfos treats us the same way. So we could ask now, what are the conditions? When do we say it, and when don't we say it? Why is it sometimes yes and sometimes no? So for mayim megulin and for dancing on Shabbos and clapping hands, we say the reason's no longer there, so the gezeira is gone. When it comes to some other things, we have the gezeira has to stay no matter what the situation. I think what the difference is you've got to examine whether at the time of the gezeira, did the gezeira apply universally? Or was there a subset of situations to which the gezeira didn't apply? If there's a subset of situations to which the gezeira doesn't apply, and that subset is now expanded to fill the whole world, then that still doesn't apply. So let's think of an example. There's a quote in the Sanhedrin, in fact, who holds that the issur of yayin nesech, of stam yenam is wine, even if it wasn't used for avodah zarah, but it was nearly touched by a non-Jew, has the din of Yayin Nesek. We're not allowed to use it. What is the reason? So there are two reasons. The one reason that is given is because like a gezeira, so you don't know, sometimes it is used for abudazor and so on. So the Kodin Yisrael says, what happens with wine in our day, for example, and certainly in our parts of the world, where wine is never used for abudazor unless it's specifically used for abudazor. I'm not talking about sacramental wine, but the ordinary wine you go and buy in the Cape Flats, in the Cape Winelands, that's not abudazor. You're buying the in the Napa Valley in California, that wine hasn't been used for abudazor. It won't be. That's not why it's made. Nobody has an interest in it. Does Yayin Nesek apply? Does Stam Yayin apply? And he wants to say it doesn't. What do we say? But the Gezeira was made such that it should apply no matter what. So he says the Gezeira was made for those places where wine is used actively for abudazor. But in those places where wine was not used for abudazor, the Gezeira didn't apply. Now in those days, that was just a small part of the world where it was not used for abudazor. So there was a small little set to which the Gezeira didn't apply. That small little set has expanded to cover most of the Western world. So it's expanded, the Gezeira still doesn't apply in that space, even though since the space has got bigger. If they make a Gezeira that applies to every situation in the world, then there's no way you can get out of it afterwards. Do you follow the difference? So in the case of Mayim Megulim, you would have to say, they didn't say you may not drink any water that's been uncovered. They said we're making a gezeira of uncovered water in places where there's a possibility that there could be poison in it. That, even if you know there wasn't poison, you can't drink it. So if you're in a little tent in the game reserve, and there's a possibility of poisoning, you can't drink that water even if you know for sure nothing came into it. Because there's a gezeira. But the gezeira wasn't made for situations where it wasn't possible for there to be poison. And even if that was, if most places it was likely or possible for there to be poison in those days, and only a few places where it wouldn't be poison, in our day most places it can't be. So all that's happened is the subset to which the gezeira never applied in the first place has expanded. And therefore it's okay. And therefore we would have to understand the base Joseph's explanation of Tosfos the same way here. When Tosfos says there's a gezeira shema yisakin kli, what we're saying is the gezeira was only given to people who know how to make instruments. In those days that was most people. But if there was a town where nobody knew how to make an instrument, the gezeira wouldn't apply in that town. And now that town is expanded to cover the whole world. They don't know how to make instruments. So that's the differentiation we have to make. We have to analyze, was the gezeira originally made universally, in which case there's nothing we can do? Or was the gezeira made on a portion of situations or populations, even if that portion was 99%? If there's a 1% or a 0.5% that at the time of the gezeira didn't apply to, then if that little piece has expanded, the gezeira remains non-applicable to that particular piece. So I thought it was quite interesting because I would think we could expand this to the case of taking medication on Shabbos. What is the reason that you can't take medication on Shabbos? Shema Yeshachas Umamonim, in case you'll come to make medicines. Well, where do you make medicines? You don't buy the medicines. We don't make medicines anymore. So what would have happened in a situation where there is no place anywhere, even at that time, if there was a town that nobody made medicines. People lived till 120 without medication. They never used medication. Would the gezeira apply? The gezeira wouldn't have applied. So that's extent. Today we don't make medicines. And I would suggest, based on this Tosfos, I've always looked for a source for it. Intuitively, I've always sensed that we should be makele with that today. If somebody's suffering with a bad headache, or take medication. And the halacha says, and once there's a gezeira, even if the reason doesn't apply, you don't apply. But I was very excited to find this Tosfos. Because here we see the case of Tosfos with the case of the kleshu, when we're given the reason. And the reason we're given the reason is because it only applies to specific situations and not others. Then when that other situation expands, it doesn't apply in the others too. And based on this Tosfos, I would suggest that one can be much more makele with medication on Shabbos today, because we don't know something that we can't make some, we don't know how. But if a person's a homeopath and he's got all these bottles in his house and he or she does mix medicines and make medicines, the gezeira would absolutely apply to them. If a person's got a pharmacy and they have to open the pharmacy on Shabbos to help the patient and they have a headache, they certainly can't take medication. that an ordinary person who's got no skills in this area, whatever, there's no, the Gezeira was never applied to such a situation in the first place, is what would come up.
Certainly, we can wind
up that. No, well, according to the Sanhedrin, you can, but nobody else holds that way. They do use rennet. They use synthetic rennet. Yeah, still a problem because that's not to do with kashrus. That's like wine also. It's not made by a Jew. That's a different thing. It's not to do with kashrus. Okay, so let's go further in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, so clearly we have a principle that when somebody is going to do something in any event, don't be mochiach them, don't tell them about it, because by doing so you're simply converting a shogeg into a mezuzah, and what's the point of that? Vahani midi, says the Gemara, bidrabon. This applies to a drabon. Aval bidoraisa lo. But if the person is going to be over a doraisa, then you've got to intervene, even if they're not going to listen to you. Asked the Gemara, v'lohi. That's not true. Loishno bidoraisa, loishno bidrabon. Even a doraisa, you don't intervene if you know they're not going to listen to you. Even a doraisa. How do we know that? There is a doraisa that you've got to start fasting on Yom Kippur a little bit before night, before sunset. There's got to be a tosefes Yom Kippur. It's not a drabon, that's a doraisa. The fast starts a little bit before the time. And we see v'achli b'shosu ad shechashecha. We see people eating until the last minute. Nobody says anything to them, even though it's a doraisa. So the Gemara concludes, even in a case of a doraisa. So you have no chiyuv to see. You see somebody riding in his car on Shabbos, and you know if you tell him Shabbos, he's not going to stop his car to move. Oh, he didn't realize, he can get out and walk. He's going to carry on driving. Not only do you have no obligation to do so, but it would be awesome to do so. It would be forbidden to do so, because you would be turning his shogeg into amazing. And the... So we'll explore this a little bit further in the Rishonim. Firstly, the Rosh says, this only applies if you know for sure the person won't listen. But if you don't know for sure that the person won't listen, then you do have to be mechiyach, because there's a part, a possibility the person will listen, and then you have the opportunity to stop the aveira altogether. So because of some doubt, maybe they won't listen, that's not your problem. If you feel there's a possibility that comes to a Jew, actually, and there's a Rosh who feels he has enough influence to maybe stop the person, then that would be what they would have to do.
Does that
apply to both of the women and the rest? And we'll come to that. Does that apply to... So, firstly, in the Drabonin, says the Rosh, only if you know for sure they're going to listen. You talk about the case of the Rosh, that was the Ponovich Rosh, I think it was the Ponovich Rosh in Ponovich, the barbers started opening on Shabbos. And maybe it was the Ponovich Rosh. Might have been the Kovner of it. I think it was the point of Israel. And he spoke to the barbers, they wouldn't listen. And he warned people in the community not to go to the barbers on Shabbos, Jewish barbers. And people were going, because they, you know, barber was a big, it was like a thing. It's like women go to hairdressers. Men used to go, they used to get a shave and a massage and a haircut and get all the latest gossip. It was relaxing for them. And Shabbos was the only day that they weren't working. It was the only day they could go. The barbers realized they could do a good business. People went, and that's what happened. Nobody would listen. So the next Shabbos, the Ponovich Rov went into the barber on Shabbos and he just sat down, took out his Gemara and learned for the day. Nobody came. The next Shabbos, Ponovich Rov turned up at the barber, sat at the barber's, waited at the barber shop, took his Gemara and learned. Nobody came. By the third Shabbos, the barber shop closed. So there are ways to do it. So that's the Rosh. So now I would say to you, how could you possibly know that the person for sure won't listen to you? How do you know that? What does for sure mean? So for sure doesn't mean 100%. You can't know 100%. For sure means a reasonable assumption. What is the basis on which you would make a reasonable assumption that person is not going to listen to you? I understand. Sometimes you kind of know it. We're talking about a show game. We're not talking about a person who's doing it by mazik at this point. So you see somebody, you know he's doing it by mistake. What would make you think that by talking to him, he wouldn't say, oh, sorry, didn't realize it was Shabbos. Stop doing it. How can you know about that? And I'll tell you that the answer is in Rashi, but I would like you to find the answer in Rashi. The answer is in the Rashi, Hanach Lahem Bedovashi. Hanach Lahem. Can you see that Rashi? About 15 lines from the bottom. Rashi answers that question. Sorry? Right, it's habits. It says Rashi, Bedovo Shehir Gilu Boy Veloyatsuru Bohem. So I was interested, is Rashi telling us there are two conditions? Number one, it's got to be something that they free, that they do habitually. And number two, it's got to be something that you know they're not going to stop doing. Now I realize, no, that would, then Rashi would read a little differently. Rashi would then have to read, Hanachle and Bedovo Shehir Gilu Boy Veshelloyatsuru Bohem. There would have to be another Shinne. Veshelloyatsuru Bohem. That would be two conditions. Number one, it's Hirgil, it's custom, so it's a habit. Number two, Loyatsu. But he doesn't say that. He says, Hanachlem Bagovashi Hirgilu Boy Veloyatsu Boyan. So what is Rashi saying? It's a result of that. It's because it's habitual that they won't stop. So if somebody's doing it habitually, you're entitled to assume that even if you tell them, that's not going to stop them. Might stop them now, but next Shabbos they'll do it, or when you turn your back they'll do it. What does that tell us? An amazing yesod in that, isn't that? That when a person's in a habit, you can assume it's not going to stop. That's frightening. Doesn't mean it's impossible to stop. One can stop a habit, but it's hard. So there's an assumption. A person's in a habit, you can predict. That's what. Yeah, an addiction is even more. A giver is not even an addiction. An addiction is even more. The police in the United States, we have police forces across the country who are our clients, and they believe absolutely, as a rule, once a criminal, always a criminal. They don't believe that they stop. I'm not talking about a person who's called online, but a person who's, no matter how small the crime or big, they don't believe you let them lock them into jail, let them out, there's no, it's a habit, you're not going to stop it. And they predict crime that way, and there's a total assumption that once there's a habit, it's not going to be very, very hard to break a habit. And we see here in Halacha, you're entitled to make an assumption of predictability based on habit. You can't make an assumption of predictability based on a past event. But on a habit, you can make an assumption of predictability. A person does it habitually, they'll continue doing it unless something dramatic causes them to change. And that's very, it shows the power of habit. And it works that way with good things too. That's how you get into a habit of getting into davening every morning, you get into a habit of going to a shiur at a fixed time, you get into a habit of keeping Shabbos, whatever it is, and it becomes difficult to break after a while. That's what you shouldn't call a second nature. And they still carry, yeah. After saying Kaddish for a year, they carry on coming to the minyan. Yeah. That's right, 90 times. And after 30 days, when you've said it 90 times, you may assume that you've said it even if you're not sure.
But you see, you can also get beyond the habit, because it is natural, if you're not saying it, you're not saying it, but somehow...
You can start a new habit.
Yeah.
You can take on a new habit. And you can break a habit too. We're not saying that you can't break a habit, but you're entitled to predict. If a person habitually does something, you may predict it's going to continue. They have that in the States of sex offenders, there's a complete assumption that it's not going to stop unless there's treatment, unless there's addiction, so alcoholism, all these things. One has to be very, very careful to watch one's habits because it becomes out of control. And then you might say, well, then I'm an onus. Once I've got a habit and I'm doing something wrong, I'm an onus. It's out of control. But firstly, it's not altogether out of control. It's just predictable. And secondly, then what are you punished for? For getting into the habit. So now that you have getting into the habit, that's the thing that one has to have the consequence for. So the Rashi obviously supports the Rosh and answers up how you can, on what do you base the predictability. Says Rashi, you base the predictability on habit. The Rosh further says in the name of the Bala Itur that it's all very well saying for even for a Doraisa you don't have to intervene. However, if it is Mefurash Bikro, if it's explicit in the Torah, you do intervene. So the case of eating Erev Yom Kippur is not Mefurash in the Torah. It says that you must be in Nisim, Esnach Shaseichem, Betisho. It says you must afflict your souls on the 9th and the 10th of Tishrei. I said, where's the 9th? You don't afflict yourself for the various different reasons. Some say that's from there we learn the mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur, that you're preparing for Yom Kippur, and the Gemara learns from there that there are a few moments of the 9th of Tishrei on which you need to fast as well. So it's not explicit. It doesn't say it explicitly. We learn it from a posuk. If we learn it from a posuk, then you don't intervene if somebody's doing it. But if it's explicit in a posuk, if somebody's lighting a match on Shabbos, then you do intervene. Even if it's b'shogeg, that's why somebody you say driving a car is explicit in the Torah or not? Sorry, it's a drive. You're going to work it out that it's also. It doesn't say that I shall not drive cars. You would have worked it out. So if that's the case, then it would be wrong to intervene against somebody who's driving a Shabbos. You know, unless they might listen to you. There aren't that many derives explicit. Yeah, there aren't that many derives explicit. The other thing that I said, yeah, so it's the other Yisurim. Muktzah, there's all sorts of Yisurim. I often tell the story one late on Friday night, I'm walking in the Shorim, and a car came by, and a little old chassid next to me, Shabbos, he said softly. So I stopped him and I said, Rabbi, it's interesting for me, why are you shouting at him? And he can't even hear you. And you start shouting at me? What's the point? He says, I'm shouting at me, it's himself. I need to remember it's Shabbos. Every time I see a car, I get a shout at myself. This mustn't weaken my Shabbos. He must do what he wants to do, but I mustn't weaken my Shabbos. That's something else. The Ritvo says, what about if he's doing it b'mezid? Does the principle apply? What then? What is the reason we don't do it now? He doesn't do it b'mezid. But if he's already doing it b'mezid, the reason doesn't apply. Therefore, says the Ritvo, if he's doing it b'mezid, you must intervene. Even if he's not going to listen to you, you have an obligation to intervene. You can get worse than mezid. We'll come to that. You can get worse than mezid. But there are others, the Tosfos view, there are others who hold that even if it's mefurash b'Torah, the same din applies. It's better, if you know the person is not going to listen to you, don't intervene. No chiyuv to intervene if the person is not going to listen to you. Don't be mechiyach. Then there's a tashbeis that is brought in the Chazan Sofer, and he says it's interesting, if a few people are doing it b'shogeg, but most people aren't, then should you intervene? What would be the reason to say yes? Yeah, it's a social responsibility. A few people have started breaking Shabbos, on the Rabbanan, or according to the others who hold it, even with the Doraisa. It's true, it's only a few people. If everybody's doing it already, then you can say, but if you're shogeg, why intervene? But yeah, there is a reason why to intervene. They're doing it for shogeg, you know what it makes them to do, it's amazing. But they're breaking down barriers for the rest of the community, and you want to stop the spread of it, so you need to intervene for the sake of the others who are not doing it. They're interesting because there are two sources from which the obligation to intervene comes. What are the two sources? What are the mitzvahs? Why should one intervene altogether? Is one. What's the other one? Not quite. No, the other reason is Kol Yisrael Arevim Zelzeh. So what is the deal with Arevus? If I make Kiddush and you want to be Yotze, then what? It's as if you made Kiddush. And if I'm Mechalo Shabbos and you stand by and say Amen, by being silent, you'll be Mechalo Shabbos with me. It can't work offwards. If I can do a mitzvah for you, I can do an avera for you too. So just as by saying Amen, by supporting my mitzvah, you can be yotzer with my mitzvah, by supporting my avera, you nitpas ala avera, the avera gets transferred to you too. So it's not a question of a shliach really, it's not that you're doing it al shlichus, it's just that you're standing by and supporting your right to be when you motzer somebody, there's a din of shlichus, but it's more a din of arvus. Kol Yisrael Arevim Zelazeh means it's like we're guarantors on a debt. So A borrows from B, and C is the guarantor, A defaults, B goes to C, although C did nothing. C was only trying to help. So you can stand by and watch an Avero and you're doing nothing, but you're standing by, that's participation. So one part of the reason that he's Shabbos is at least that I'm not part of this. I don't approve of this. I'm not here to change him, I'm just here to separate myself from him. So, would apply. Let's take a case of shogeg. So the person doesn't want to do wrong. He's doing wrong, he didn't know any better. Is there din of rechayach tachiyach? The person's doing wrong by mistake. Let's say where you know where he will listen to you. Yeah, there's certainly a rechayach tachiyach, isn't it? What about arevus? Is there din of arevus? Am I responsible for that reason? Yes. I'm responsible to stop that. So in the case of shogeg, both reasons apply. What about mezit? If a person... Sorry? Well, the arevus may not apply. Why? Because what does arevus mean? Arevus means we're responsible for each other. So who am I responsible for? Somebody who wants to protect themselves. I can help. I'm not responsible for people who don't want to. For people who've opted out, I'm not responsible. I'm responsible, which is an interesting idea, the Bir HaLocha, the Mishnah Berurah passes that in Bir HaLocha, it's in the Tafresh Ches. I'm responsible for people who've opted in, but they're not mindful, they're making a mistake, they don't know, they've forgotten, responsible. But I'm not responsible for somebody who says, I don't want to be part of that group. I don't have to schlep in and make a sense, that's not my chiv. What about that's what Cheach to Cheach still is. Because a Cheach to Cheach is a mitzvah on me, a Cheach to Cheach is not in order to change him. In order to be Mekayim and Mitzvah, so to make it very clear, and it's a separate Mitzvah, all in terms, so that would apply. Arevus is the consequence of being responsible for one another. Ochayach is a self-standing Mitzvah. What happens about a Purek Ol? You said, is there anything worse than a Mezid? Yes. Machtid Ol, a Purek Ol, a person who publicly says, I'm out of this, I don't care, I don't want to know, I'm a Purek Ol, I'm throwing Yiddishkeit out. What now? So, Arevus there certainly isn't. What about a Cheach to Cheach? As the Tana de Be'el Yo says, it says, Cheach to Cheach es Amitecho. The Tana de Be'el Yo, in Perikit Ches, Amitecho b'mitzvahs. Somebody, what is a friend? A friend is somebody who shares a value system. So, an Amit is, he's not an Amit if he's not part of your value system. If he's outside of your value system, it's not Amitcho. If it's not Amitcho, then he's Soinocho, he's a Rosha. You're not supposed to have friends who are Roshoim. So if he's somebody who's opted out, he's a Rosha. If he's a Rosha, he's not Amitcho. If he's not Amitcho, Cheach to Cheach doesn't apply. Says the Tana de Be'el Yo. He's outside of the principle of the Cheach to Cheach. So that's another reason why there wouldn't be a Chiyuv to be Mocheach people who publicly go. So they answer in Meashoim, and these places when they used to throw stones, I don't think they still do. But in those days they would answer. But these people are doing it dafka. They're doing it to make us angry. All the more reason that you're not chayav to do anything about it. Because they're perekol. If they're perekol, they're shown they're not your friends. In other words, being mochiach is an act of friendship. Chatoichocho is an act of friendship, not an act of enmity. If you're resentful about somebody, if you don't like somebody, don't confront them. Leave them alone. Just don't deal with them. You mochiach somebody you care about. And you can only be mochiach somebody you care about. And somebody will only take it if they feel cared about. If somebody is mochiach you and you don't feel cared about, then how do you respond? You say, he's no, his ego, or he's this, or he's trying to control me, or you put it on the other person, you don't respond. But if the person who's mochiach you is somebody you know loves you, because you know how supportive they are, and you feel their care, and they mochiach you, then it's something you listen to very carefully. So it's something that concerns you. So it's a cheach to cheach. You see from the Tana de Be'el Yo. Since the Tana de Be'el Yo says, if he's a Rosho, he's not your friend. If he's not your friend, there's no echtechocho. Because the Pasuk says, it's amitecho. You see from there that you're only allowed to be mechiach as amitecho. So what happens if you're a manager in business and your employee is not performing? So you have to be mechiach. You have to do techocho. You have to confront, have a performance management discussion. But you do, it's part of your job. But what do we learn from this? What's the principle we learn? For it to be effective, you've got to be sure that person, that employee, knows how much you care about him before you give him tachocha. Then it'll be effective. But when it's not a fear, when it's just a matter of kind of going through the motion, it doesn't have any effect, unless out of fear. Say the person, if you don't stop doing this, this will happen, or that, then out of fear it will happen. But it doesn't bring about true change of behavior. True change of behavior comes out of tichocha, that comes from a place of love. And that's incredibly valuable. Everybody should be careful to make sure that they have friends who love them enough to be mechiach. Every business leader, and the higher you are, the more important it is to make sure that you have people around you who love you enough to be mechiach. Because if you don't, you lose touch. You have no mirror to look in, you get no feedback. Very, very difficult. Techocho, what's the mitzvah right after techocho of mechiach is amitecho? What's the next mitzvah? Ve'av to l'reacha kamecho. That's how you get to the ahav to l'reacha kamecho. You don't get to the ahav to l'reacha kamecho by avoiding confrontation. You get to the ahav to l'reacha kamecho when somebody knows you care enough about them to be mechiach them. Then you can get to the ahav to l'reacha kamecho. And it's the same in intimate relationships, husband, wife, parent, children. Very, very important that there's an openness to that and a non-defensiveness to that, and that one invites that and it's done constructively. But there's to round it off, there's an important Meshech Chochma. Where the Meshech Chochma says that on the din of, if you see if you see your brother's donkey suffering under the load, Azov Tazov Ima, you would have helped the donkey up. So it says in the volume in Parashas Ki Teitzei, Loisire Chamor Achicha, don't stand by and watch your brother's donkey crouching under the load, and then you don't do anything to help. But the same din appears in Mishpotim, in Shmos, and there it says, Chamor Oyivcha, the donkey of your enemy. And Chazal say from there, even if he's your enemy, you need to overcome that and you need to help. So why is that? I'll learn the Meshech Chochma for you. The Meshech Chochma says, Mishum de ba'alvei psochin omar mi shari l'shinuyah. How can it talk about the donkey of your enemy? Since when are you allowed to hate anybody? Not allowed to hate people. Hoksiv lo tisma achicho bilvolcho. Says you may not hate your brother in your heart. Umuki bero boi she'ovar avera. And the Gemara comes to the conclusion, if you see somebody being over an avera, and you can't do anything about it, because you're only a single person who's seen it. So if there are two people who've seen it, you can go to the Beis Din or to the Rav, and you can give aidus, and they can intervene and do something. But what happens if you're the only one who saw it? What happens if you go to the Rav to tell him? It's Lashon Hara. If you go as aidus, then you're being constructive. If you go in, the Rav says, I can't do anything. I'm not allowed to believe you. I don't think there's aidus. Well, even if I want to believe you emotionally, I can't act on it. So what's the point of telling somebody something they can't act on? That's Lashon Hara. Tell somebody something they can act on, that's not Lashon Hara. But if you tell somebody something they can't act on, that's Lashon Hara. So what do? So you're allowed to despise the person. You're allowed, you saw it, you know they did wrong. So you can despise the person. That's how the Gemara concludes it. However, says the Meshech Chochma, v'zeh hayo kodem ha'egel. That was before the sin of the golden calf, Parshas Mishpatim. Asher hayu kulo mamleches goy kodesh. They were all a holy nation. Then you were entitled to despise somebody who did wrong. But not later on, when the whole of Klal Yisrael did so many things wrong. If you now see your friend sinning, have a look at yourself, says the Meshech Chochma. Big tzaddik. You see somebody else sinning and say, oh, look what they've done. Terrible thing. Everybody will find areas they've done wrong. Achen also this loyish kazeh, so you can't hate them. What are you going to hate them for something you're also doing? Just they got caught and you didn't. So we don't have the right anymore to hate over Avera, because we're one of them. Rak mishu ba'atmo sami rav tzadik tami midirachov, only for somebody who himself is a tzadik who doesn't do anything wrong, then you can hate. An absolute tzadik is allowed to hate. But we're not. About kosher insek emosu. Where are you going to find such a person? Isn't that a beautiful Meshech Chochma? So the din still applies. Since we're now after the time of the Egel, and we all do things that are wrong, can't despise somebody for doing something wrong. Can't be that judgmental. We can We can be judgmental about the action. We don't like those actions, but don't judge the person, because you don't want to be judged yourself. When we start judging others, Hashem judges us, and that's not a good place to be in. One doesn't know what the people will become righteously indignant, and you get things and. Absolutely. We're not tzaddikim enough to be able to decide who to like and who to hate. And that they've got our personal taste, that's something else, but that's not hatred. To hate somebody because they're over and over and over, we're not in a position to be able to do that. So in that case, even though the time of the Baal Yod says that if somebody is a Rosho, you don't have to be mukhiyachim because you don't have to have anything to do with them. It's possible that today, since we're all a little bit in that space, either you've got to say, no matter what, you've got to be mukhiyach, or you've got to say, who are we to be mukhiyach? Altogether, who are we to be mukhiyach? So a person is righteous and sees somebody else doing something wrong, you're mukhiyach. But if you're also doing wrong, who are you to be mukhiyach? So it's a question today whether altogether there's tzaychocha, other than the people that give us permission to do that. A close friend, we said with them, with love, where you want to be, you want to exist. So in such a case, you give each other permission to be mukhiyach, and it's a good thing to do. It's actually, tell somebody explicitly, I expect you, I want you to. It's good for it's something that I want to hear. And if somebody gives permission, that's different. But to go judging people and to be mukhiyach people in situations where we ourselves are so far from being guiltless, that's not something we're in a position to be able to do.